Another one is called getInputStream, which takes a URL and returns an input stream. getOutputStream, when you want to write through it. And there's a couple other variants on it in case you already have a stream. And sometimes people in an application server environment, they'll already have the data coming in some sort of stream from some resource somewhere. It may even be in a some sort of character buffer or something, and they don't want to write it to disk to do the transform, so we'll let you deal with that. But now what we're going to do is we're going to run the same program we had before except using the URLs, and the really funny part about it is even though our input is an EDI document, the output looks the same. So that's pretty good. So let's go a little further. Adapters can go either one way or both ways. So let's go and take a quick look at this one here. This one's a little bit uglier. It's the Microsoft. It doesn't really like this font, does it? It's leaving a little trailer behind as I tab up. Here we've done kind of the same thing, but this time we've also changed our out from just being an out, the system.out, which is the equivalent to standard out. Here we've changed it to adapter:CSV, our built-in comma separate value adapter. Told it what the new line is. I just made one little tweak. Remember I told you early on, maybe if you don't remember, I'll tell you again. But early on I said that in the URL for the built-in adapters, you can override some of the default settings. Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to override the default setting for the delimiter to make it a space. Now, is anyone familiar with any tools that use, instead of a comma as a separator between elements in their export format, happen to use a space? Anyone? Okay, it's the 4GL. So, actually, you know that in version 6, I think, you got the ability to put a delimiter on import or export. Would you like to guess who implemented that? It's too late to clap now. That was back in 82 or 92 or something, but that's why. So let's see. Let's run that. Now we're going to run that same one. Java 3. And by the way, I'm using Saxon, and Saxon is an XSLT2 engine, but I'm just running XSLT1 through it, so it's going to give me a warning. You can override the warning, but I chose not to because I wanted to be honest and show you what I was doing without making the code too big and putting in a handle. So there's our warning. But there's our output format, and it's reading in the EDI. This stuff is not on the conference CD, but it will be on the Stylus Studio website when I get back. So if you want to download it and play with it, you'll be welcome to. So let's see now. I'm not even using 10. ProWin 32. Let's see if it works. File open. This should not be a very complicated program. Okay, does anyone need me to explain this one? All right. All we're going to do is we're going to do input through, and we're going to run that program. We're going to pipe the warning to null, just because, well, you know. And we're going to display the output. So what do we have here? We have our simplified EDI syntax read into progress. Ooh. So I guess I skipped. We're not supposed to do that yet. Now I can do it because I hit the running slide. So I skipped the part about compiling. I pre-compiled them. You don't mind if I skip that. You just type Java C in the name of the class and then Java in the name of the class. And we did it. So this is basically what we did, right? So I promised I'd show you a couple other things. And let's see, how are we doing on time? I'm up? 15 minutes. Oh, good. So I want to show you two other things, and then any questions you have, I'll be happy to take. You're a slightly more sophisticated audience than I had expected, so that's good. I had thought that I would get people who didn't know anything about EDI or XML and have to do some explaining, but I guess I should have known better. Let's see. Here's a nice little piece of code. How many of you ever see things that come in looking like this? Okay. We love those one-line files, don't we? And a lot of times, I think the real-time event engine guys say they get a stream of this fixed width stuff that comes in 50,000 records a second, some outrageous thing like that, and they've got to parse them and deal with them. So let's do something with that. File, new, convert to XML. This example comes from Dave Foster, who's our technical writer who loves motorcycles, and you'll see why in a few seconds. Let's see, bikes.dat. I think there's even some examples like this in our documentation. Okay, well, there's not very much information for stylists to use to guess at the format here, so what we're going to do is we're going to play around a little bit and see if we can abstract the format from it. Now, typically, you might have a piece of paper or a photocopy of a piece of paper or maybe a mimeograph or maybe something with pen and ink that describes the format. And so you have to go and tune it. And we're going to tweak it a little bit. I'm just going to play with the record width. You know, it's probably easier just to do this and see if I can make some sense out of it. Ooh, stuff lined up. Okay, cool. All right, we're going to do output. File. Let's see, we'll just call it, we have a B1. All right, so, well, that's not very useful XML, is it? So let's go and do a little bit more. I can say begin field in this column. That looks like a field there. Begin field in this column. Begin field in this column. Is that right? That looks like mileage, doesn't it? So year is probably always four, so let's move that out of the way there. That's a little better. But it's still not right, so let's go here. That looks like make. That looks like model. Year. Mileage. See our little schema updated over here. Oh, that's even better. But you know what? If we're going to generate the output, sometimes the output doesn't always all follow the same schema. In this particular case, we're just going to do something different with BMWs. We're going to pretend that this is an EDI-like format. And so I'm going to say that I want the BMW records handled differently. So I'm just going to use the same stuff I did before to select them. And now see I have a separate schema over here, one for generic rows and one that matches a slightly different pattern. So, and we have this neat little highlighter here so you can see the rows that match the pattern of the row you're on. Boom, boom, boom. And run. So now here, the BMW rows show up with one set of schema, and the non-BMW rows show up with another set. Now, just out of curiosity, is anyone in here use Stylus Studio? Okay. All right. There's something really cool. I got to show you this. In Stylus Studio, we have a really neat feature, and it's called back mapping. Have you ever gone and generated a report somewhere, and you look at the data in your report, and you say, where the heck did that come from? Wouldn't it be great if you could find the line of code that generated that output? In Stylus Studio, we annotate the output in the preview window. So if you click on it, we'll take you to the source that generated that. Or if you, I think it's control-click on it, it's configurable, so I never remember which is which. You control-click on it, it will take you to the source of the XML that generated it. And we do kind of the same thing down here. So if you're down here somewhere and you click on this, there's the cursor in that field, or this. So that's just kind of cool. Anyways, if you've ever dealt with XSLT and you end up with the, there's a variant of XSLT called DocBook. There's an XML standard for publishing. And the sheets to transform it are just monstrous. And they're done by a guy at Sun named Norm Walsh, who's like, I don't know, he's brilliant. He's like the, I don't even know how to describe him. He's way out there. And these things are, they're beautiful. They're so elegant, but they're also huge. And trying to figure out what's going on can be very difficult if you're looking at someone else's code. And this thing here will let you pinpoint exactly what broke it. Because what Stylus Studio is not only do we have all this transformation stuff, but we have an environment for debugging. So if you're using our own internal engines and you hit problems, you can set breakpoints. You can stop, you can look at the variables, you can single step, you can look at the output as it's built. When you get output, you can click on the partially through the run. You can click on the call stack and jump to the code and see what's where and what the variables were there.